business and then to our coordinator, Nomonde Jamka, and the assistant coordinator, Mary Ann Burgess. Thank you. Members, a member, Wenger, is still stuck in traffic, so she will join. Any apologies, members, that you have received? Member Gillian, you want to raise something?
Ms. Chairperson, if you allow me just a concern. I think we just heard that there is an emergency in Robertson. That's why the MEC and the HOD is not here. Can we have more details? Because I think this is a very important presentation to the committee. And there is questions that I think that the MEC and the HOD were supposed to answer. So if we can just get more details, because for me it's really, it's unacceptable. And if only if it is a real emergency. But we can't allow that when we come here as a committee prepared for the MEC and the HOD to get answers from other people.
Dr. Valerie, thank you.
Madam Chair, I don't have more details on the specifics, but we can provide that to the committee. I don't have more details on the specifics, but we can provide that to the committee.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So I welcome the department with regards to the presentation on the health facility boards and clinic committees. The regulations and the implementation of the regulations. And I see, Dr. Balupji, that you are taking us through this presentation. Thank you. Sorry, Dr. Balupji, you didn't raise any apologies. You didn't receive any apologies, eh? Members Gillian or Gopi?
No.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Dr. Balupji.
Member Makaleni is exit.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So the intention is to give you an update of where we are with the regulations and the progress we've made with implementation. So I'm going to cover four areas. The first one is just to remind ourselves of what the purpose of the Act was. Just to go over a bit on the regulations. There are three sets of regulations we need to just to remind ourselves and then give you progress on implementation and then some concluding remarks. So the purpose of the Act was really to establish functions and procedures for hospital boards and primary healthcare facilities. And this latest set of amendments was largely around the clinic committees in the primary healthcare space. And it's really about establishing representative and accountable health facility boards and committees, improving the responsiveness of management to community needs, fostering community support for and involvement in health facilities and programs, the responsible use of resources at health facility level, and then to make sure that health facility boards and clinic committees are provided with a basic set of clearly defined functions which may incrementally be expanded in the public interest as capacity of a board or committee increases. Okay. So that was the Act. When it comes to the regulations, we started this process last year. It was a public process for comments, and there are three sets of regulations. The first set is around financial governance. The second one is around criteria and procedures to cluster facilities. And the third one is the process to call for nominations. Okay. The financial governance were clearly the most detailed and elaborate set of regulations, and I just put the kind of list of headings to just give you a flavor of what is contained in the regulation. I don't intend to go through each of these. But in the main, the funds of a clinic committee are paid to, administered by, and accounted for by the board. So the clinic committees are clustered and attached to a hospital board. Okay. The board must confirm the availability of funds before a clinic committee can commit an expenditure. The board makes the payments on behalf of the clinic committees, and the department will reimburse transport expenses for clinic committee meetings. I just want to say at the formulation stages, there was a concern about this, that, you know, will the clinic committee funds just get absorbed in a bigger pool of funding, etc. So the way it would be clearly demarcated that this is for this clinic committee, so it will be managed as such. Criteria for clustering primary healthcare facilities. So these are the criteria: the geographic distance between facilities, the size and distribution of the population served by the facility, and the service volume of the facility too. So those were the criteria in the Act. The process for clustering, the Act makes provision for the district health managers to make recommendations, looking at the criteria to provide the minister with recommendations, and then the minister must consider those recommendations before she makes a final decision. When it comes to procedures for the nomination of members, the Act clearly stipulates that these are some of the ways in which the call for nominations should be advertised, and it says that it must be published in a provincial gazette, and then we could either publish or broadcast at least two invitations calling for nominations, and these are the options that we have. So it's you know, in print publications in local areas in the language that is most spoken. It could be in an electronic format, it could be radio, it could be a website. So that's the background to the Act and the regulations. Now we're going to move to what progress have we made to date. So the Act makes provision for concurrence with the provincial ministers of finance and local government, because both these departments and ministries are impacted upon. So the concurrence was received on those dates. Proclamation, the regulations were signed off by the minister in the latter half of November, and it came into effect on the 7th of December. And also part of this process was clear designation of facilities. So that actually happened. Clustering, once the Act and the regulations came into effect, the minister was then empowered to sign off the cluster of facilities. District management applied their minds to this and forwarded a set of recommendations which the minister then signed off using those criteria that I spoke to previously. The call for nominations, these are the various means that we used to call for nominations. So adverts were placed in local newspapers across the province in the months of January and February after the regulations were promulgated. Radio adverts were undertaken. It was published in the Gazette, the departmental website. And at that stage, the closing date was the 28th of February for rural facilities and 9th of March for the city of Cape Town. And the minister then convened a summit. It was in early March. I don't have the exact date on my mind, but there was clearly a call there for extension of the time frame. So the minister then agreed that the closing date for nominations will now be 15th of May. There were concerns about the nomination form itself, and that was extensively revised, and we've put that out. It's been made much more user-friendly. A communication was sent out to all who attended the health summit, including the NPOs on our database, and the revised form has also been made available on our website, and our director of communications has put out a whole lot of messages on social media as well. So you're not expected to read this, but I did circulate the nomination form, so it was quite extensively worked through, and that's available. These are some of the kind of examples of things that we put on social media and on posters that are up in clinics. Okay? And I just got this, so this might not be in your pack, and I apologize, I got this yesterday. So the social media coverage, the figures we have, it's almost reached close to 300,000 people on social media, and 1,299 have engaged, and there are 242 reactions to that. So some people have actually put their details on the Facebook, and we will submit that to the districts to follow through with that. These are just some examples of pictures. We've been visiting clinics in the last couple of days, and I've just taken some pictures. So in the clinics, these things are up on the notice board, etc., in the different languages, etc., which is quite encouraging. It's also on the departmental website. So the process for nominations, the district management will collate all applications, and we still got a month to go before the closing date, or approximately a month. Then the nominations will then be assessed against the criteria that are listed in the Act and the regulations. There will be a vetting process for security clearance, and then there's a set of recommendations, and the full list of nominations would also be sent to the minister. The minister will then make a final appointment after having considered the recommendations, and then we'll communicate the outcome to the applicant. I then want to move on to capacitating clinic committees. So what we've done is we've engaged NACOSA as the training provider. And NACOSA is an NGO which is quite well positioned to undertake this. They also have received funding from Global Fund with a remit for community systems strengthening. So that has assisted the department in not having to provide additional funds for that. NACOSA are developing the course content in a co-production process. And what we're intending to do is have a one-day induction and orientation program for all the clinic committees in this financial year. And that will just be an orientation and induction one. And then there'll be a more substantial training program put in place. And we want to pilot this in 5 rural sites in 18-19. But our focus is on getting the orientation done at least in this financial year. And then once we do the pilots for the training, we can... And that pilots would be between 2 to 4 days. So it might be 1 or 2 weekends that we're looking at when people are available. And then there'll be a reflection and evaluation of that before we do a full rollout of the more extensive training. So these are just some of the areas that will be covered in the induction and orientation. And I won't go through the details here, but it largely covers the kinds of functions that are expected, the kind of agency that is expected from clinic committees, some basic skills, the terms of reference, how to take part in planning and M&E activities of the facility, etc. And then NACOSA has also accessed some resources, we've got some from National and HST, and those are the resources listed on the right-hand side. It's a pocket handbook, there's a resource manual that has these, that has the detail. And then the training program itself, similarly, on your left-hand side is the kinds of areas that will be touched, and on the right-hand side are some of the resources that will be made available. So in conclusion, Madam Chair, I think we're kind of glad to have finally arrived at this point. It's been a long journey, but it's been a big achievement, and it has taken us a length of time to get here. We need to just remind ourselves the intent of this legislation and act, and it's really to encourage and allow for community involvement in health services development. We really want to hear the voice of communities and want to encourage active participation. And so the work really starts now about how we give effect to this legislation. The process of doing the legislation and the regulation has been a drawn-out process, very formal in many steps, so but we're glad to have arrived at last. And we accept that there could have been efficiencies and possibly the process could have been a bit shorter. One of the challenges has been is how do we get the balance right between the detail that must be in the regulations versus not making it so onerous that ordinary community people can't understand that. And particularly around the financial governance, we struggled with that tension. So the versions that have now we ended up with were much more extensive in the earlier version, that we had to do a lot of trimming and cutting and rephrasing and that kind of thing, just to get that balance right between having proper audit process and proper process, so from a regulatory point of view, but at the same time enabling participation. We've invested a lot now in trying to communicate and call for nominations, and that phase now, just trying to make sure we get an adequate number of nominations for the different facilities. And then the challenge is how do we make it functional going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Welcome members Winger and member Lacker. Members, I'm going to take your questions pertaining to the presentation just done. I note members Mitchell Winger and Gopi and Lekka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I've got quite a few questions, but I'm going to allow other members also the opportunity. I'm going to focus on the training part, which I think is very important. On page 12, there's a under substantial training. It says that there will be a pilot at sites in 5 rural districts. I want to know where are these 5 rural districts and how it got to choosing those five districts. And then Chair, with regards to the doctor referred to the training might be over weekends or when people are available. Now, from being on the ground in a rural constituency, weekends is not really going to work, because many people use weekends for going into town, because there's some people that live 160 kilometers to the nearest dorp to do shopping. So weekends, that's just my request, that doesn't get focused on weekends, but instead that you focus doing that on the, over the weekends, and especially when it's the end of the month, that you're never going to get anyone to attend these training sessions, which is very important. And then also, it says the training will be 2 to 4 days in length. Now, you either have training for 2 days, or you have training for 3 days, or you have training for 4 days. So is the program, or the training program, or curriculum, is it set already? And then based on that, how long is it going to take? Because you can't have, in some areas you have 2 day training and others 4 days. I mean, everyone needs to be treated and get the same information. And then just the last one on the induction an orientation program. Again, it says that there will be a 1 day induction and an orientation. Surely these things can be incorporated and then make a more substantive training program, if you know what I mean. So now you're duplicating. That's just my view. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Winner.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for being a few minutes late this morning. My question relates mainly to slide number 8 about financial governance and the regulations. I'd just like to understand, I mean, is the thinking that the boards would then basically carry two different processes, one for its own finances, because bearing in mind that many boards have their own auditing process and some have a Section 19A SARS status, which would then be influenced if they then had to include several committees' finances in that as well. They'd probably want to do it separately. Or what is the thinking about how to keep it clean and efficient and to make sure that the boards are able to then properly manage their own finances and then also the additional responsibility of the clinics? Then also, it says here that the boards would be, the funds for clinic committee are administered and accounted for by the board. So if they are auditing fees, who would be responsible for carrying those auditing fees? Would it be the board or would it be the committees that would be responsible for that? And I'd like to know if it would be possible, or if it's ready yet, the list of clusters, so to know which clinics will fit under which boards, or if that's not available, just to understand approximately how many clinics on average would each board be responsible for. And then do we have any idea when the induction will be taking place and whether that will also include the facility boards in that induction? And then just on a note that with the summit, not all the boards were informed about it.
So I just want to add, in terms of the finances of the clinic committee, does it mean that the clinic committee, when it makes a decision that it needs money for whatever it needs it, does it then have to go to the board and motivate to the board that we need the money for this? Or is it merely a application of our money, we need 20 rand for whatever? Does the board have to give permission for the clinic committee to use their own money? Just that I want to add, please. Member Gopi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is on the form that was criticized at the summit, and now that the form is being fixed, at least I'm not sure if there's anybody here that has a, because on the slide we can't see the form properly, and also I want to find out how the form was distributed to the boards, or to the people that are interested. And mostly those that were in Worcester, those that don't have emails, how did the form get to them? And which mechanism were used? And also on the final decision of the minister, is it only the minister or is it the minister with the committee or the minister with the department, the finalization of the decision that need to be taken?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question, but the first question, sorry, my apologies for arriving late. My first question, Chair, is on the clustering of facilities. And I just want to get an understanding whether in an event where the geographical distance between facilities was considered as one of the key priorities, was there some thought in relation to the community's perception in terms of clustering these facilities? I'm asking this from the perspective of members of the communities. You've got areas where it's predominantly your previously informal settlement and your areas where it's the formal houses. You've got a perception where people from a particular community will have their own reservations in terms of working with people from other areas. Your informal settlement, for instance, your clinic in Philippi and the other one in Nyanga, or the clinic in Old Crossroad, which was previously your informal settlement and the one in Nyanga. Has that thought been taken care of? Because these are the problems that we are going to experience when we go to the ground. Hence, I'm asking if we want to have a voice of the communities. Was that given a thought? The second part, Chair, would be on the clinics that are under the City of Cape Town and those that are under the Department of Health. Was there some thought given when that was integrated, and what is the view? Are we going to have those clinics serviced by the City of Cape Town, separated from the ones that are governed by the Department of Health? And the third question, Chair, is mainly in terms of your wife clustering, the political parties that are there. Was there some thought given in areas where, for instance, Mitchell's Plain? In Mitchell's Plain, you've got Ward 99, where the ward councillor is ANC, and the rest of Mitchell's Plain are DA-controlled ones. Was there some thought given in that regard, so that you don't get problems where a political party dominates another in that specific area? And if you're looking at Mitchell's Plain, you've got a hospital in Mitchell's Plain, you've got several clinics around Mitchell's Plain. What is the thinking around that specifically? And my last question, Chair, is on issues of size and distribution of the population that is served. In the last week's news, we heard of the Khayelitsha District Hospital, which the doctor that was interviewed there by a standing committee, a select committee from National Parliament, was saying there are patients that are admitted who do not necessarily reside in Khayelitsha. Others are from Delft, Mfuleni, and all of that. Now, if you want a community voice, is there some criteria set on into that will address those issues specifically? Because if you're talking of people from Delft, you would expect them to go to the Isserevier Hospital and Tiger Peak and not going to Khayelitsha, which is already overflowing. So was there some thought given into that effect? These are the recent developments, and Was there any thinking around that on how to avoid such from happening? Because people from Khayelitsha will complain that they are not getting services, priority is given to people from other areas. So was there some thought given into that regard? I think.
Thank you, Member Gillian.
Chairperson, I wait for the responses. Yeah.
Okay. If the department also can just give us some of the content of the training that you will embark on. And rural city, how does the sizes fit, or is the one size fits all? And then in terms of language, will it be available, especially to our rural communities in Xhosa and in English and Afrikaans, please? Then that is a set of questions, Doctor. Thank you.
But Chair, I'll give it a shot, and then my colleagues must just come in on relevant areas. And if I do miss out anything, you remind me. Okay, so the first set of questions is around training. And I think the and Andre Luck is our people management person who will give us the more detail. The issue of the orientation versus the training program. So it was a question of, you know, if we're going to be appointing the clinic committees in the next couple of months to try and get the induction and orientation done as soon as possible, because you don't want somebody being on a clinic committee and in training only comes a year later or so. So the ability to try and get coverage as wide as possible. And that was the intention of why we said over and above, initially we thought of the training program, but we said, listen, rather than trying to go for the big thing, at least let's get a one-day orientation and induction across the province. So that was the intention. So yes, there would be a bit of duplication between that and the training program. But I think reinforcing that is not going to be too bad a thing, I think. So that's the first point. The length of the actual training itself, I say between 2 and 4 days because we haven't bedded that one down. We're still working with NECOSA to say, looking at the content, what's the best kind of length that we should be aiming for. There is a concern that, remember, these committees also have our staff members who are also going to be part of the training. And to have somebody away for 4 days is a long time. But at the same time, you don't want to compromise the training. So we just need to get the balance right. And having done the induction and orientation, do we still need 4 days or can we go for 2 days? So that's the assessment we're still busy with, and we haven't finalized that. The thing about weekends, that was a suggestion. I think we'll have to make a call again. When does it suit people? Obviously, it has to suit people in the main. So we you know, if people are working during the week, we say, is it better to have it over the weekend? But if there's a call to have it during the week, we can also make that call, so it's not cast in stone. And then which pilot specifically, Andre will give us more detail on that. And the training content, we can make that available, so that's not an issue. Andre, you want to comment on the actual sites?
Thank you, Dr. Banerjee. Through the chair, if I could respond to the members. We haven't identified the exact sites. That, since the slide was prepared, we have now amended to 6 pilot sites, 3 in the rural and 3 in the metro. Rural and metro will select the sites. In terms of a timeline, we'll be doing an orientation pilot, a one-day program for facility managers and staff to prepare them as well through June and July. Also at 6 sites, 3 rural, 3 metro. And then we'll be doing the one-day pilot program for the clinic committees in August 2018. An important part of the orientation is to give space to the clinic committee, the community members, to provide input on co-creating where they feel the emphasis of the training should be in the formal training. So I think that is an important consideration which we take into cognizance. In September, we'll then look at the reflection, the learning adaption, and we'll finalize the orientation program, the content thereof, and also the orientation booklets and guides for September. And then the implementation is planned for October, November 2018, where NECOSA will develop the training plan for the one-day orientation, also based on their budget that they've received from the Global Fund for community health strengthening.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andre. So then I want to move on to the financial governance issue. So the relationship between the clinics and the hospitals. Sally, you want to comment on that?
I've noted three specific questions. The first is around the Section 18A tax exemption status and whether that would cover the clinics. The boards per se are registered in terms of Section 18A, and as long as the funds are paid to the board, we are of the thinking that they will qualify for the tax exemption. This has been tested in terms of Hrudisky that has in excess of 20 sub-funds under the Hrudisky report, and the tax exemption certificate is submitted and accepted, and we have not had any comebacks in that regard. We will monitor as we go along, but in essence, the regulations provide for all funds to be paid to the board, and that board has obtained the necessary Section 18A tax exemption status. Then on the audit fees, in terms of the board and whether the clinic committees will be responsible, the financial regulations have been premised on the boards having to manage all financial matters. Our annual financial statement templates, the necessary control documents, the control forms, all have been created for the boards to manage that. So when it comes to the audit of the board's activities, the clinic committees, disbursements, receipt of funds are included in the board's financial activities, and as such, the board would then be responsible for the accounting side. We have streamlined the process. We have given them a template where they'll be able to produce on a monthly basis income received from the clinics and the expenditure on those clinics. Then in terms of whether the permission of the board will be required whenever the clinic requires disbursement, we have made specifically sure that this is not the case. The board will merely have to, and this is evidence in the annexure C that has been attached, which is a disbursement form from the clinic committee to the board. So in that disbursement form, the words there are confirmation of funds. So the clinic just need to go to the board and say, are there funds, the amount that is requested, and whether the disbursement has been paid over. There's no provision made for any explanatory motivation for the purpose, and nor are the clinic committee members expected to appear before the board and explain why they want it. So it's purely for the receiving, accounting, and disbursement of the money. We've made sure that there's a clear distinction between that two. There must not be any indication that the clinic is under the decision of the board. That's the essence of the financial regulation. Thank you.
Okay, so the next set of questions were around the clustering. So Madam Chair, we can make available the list of the clusters and how they've been linked, so that's available. And the issue of working with the City of Cape Town and the perspective of the formal versus the informal settlements. So that's taken into account, and the Minister has given the final say on endorsing the clustering arrangements. But when the district managers looked at how best to cluster facilities, like I mentioned, there are certain criteria they looked at, and this would have been included as part of that consideration. But then the Minister would have made a final call on that. But we'll make the list available, and if there are concerns that could be raised, then we can always pick it up with the Minister. As far as the councillors and political parties go, the councillors are nominated by the local government. And so we've worked with the Department of Local Government to issue a circular to say that these nominations must be made. And then it's really the permit of local government to make those nominations. So we haven't delved into the political party issue. And in making the final decision, the Minister has the call to make the final decision, whether it's alone or whether she feels she needs to get a group of people to assist her with that. But what the district managers would do is, having went through all the nominations, process them according to the criteria, etc., submit the entire batch with a list of recommendations to the Minister, and it's the Minister's call to do that. And then with the City of Cape Town, there was quite good consultation with the City of Cape Town to say, how do we cluster these facilities and what makes best sense. So they were very, very much part of the process with our Metro District Health Service colleagues. I think, Madam Chair, that not sure if I'm missing, sir.
The form.
We can make the form available. I apologize. We can make the form available. But I think the concerns with the form were really this word organization for some reason caused a lot of consternation about, you know, what does that mean? We've taken that word out and we said a body. And we said a body includes, there was in the health summit, the issue of whether we have existing clinic committees and would they be regarded as a body. And we said absolutely. So the existing clinic committee could make a recommendation. So we've kept it quite loose, and that's what we've done in the form. The issue of founding documents, we're saying any evidence to say that this is a body that has been functional. So there's something to say, here's its objectives, this is how it functions, we'd accept that. So we're not going to be kind of really hard about it, must be deemed a formal constitution and that kind of thing. So we've kept it in the spirit of encouraging participation. Madam Chair, I think that's the...
Member Gillian, do you want to take this opportunity now?
Chairperson, this is exactly what I meant when I said that this committee this morning has been undermined. This meeting could have been postponed if the minister and the HOD is not here. Because there is a relevant question that only the minister can give an answer to. Now, I am really not satisfied in getting that answer from the doctor over there, because he can't answer political questions. Now, firstly, my first observation is that the issue of the rural and the metro clusters coming to this committee, this department could not give us a direct answer. The answer we are getting, 3 rural, 3 metro, we did not identify it. Don't come and waste our time, please, department. Because we are working with the community out there. If you ask you questions, we need to go back. That member, myself, is members working in the deep rural communities. So if we are asking questions, it means we must go back to our communities. If you come to this committee, come prepared, please. Don't come and give us this kind of answer. The issue of the Big Brother syndrome, I'm very worried. When we were busy with this piece of legislature, I was the one person talking about the Big Brother syndrome of hospital boards towards clinics. I can't hear that it won't be there. I can't hear it, not only in the form. How is it going to be handled in practice? You are saying to us as this committee now, in your form, they don't need permission, but can we get a guarantee? When the clinic committee needs funding, the handling of the first group in the Big Brother syndrome and the hospital body, that is the guarantee that I need. Because that is where the problem was before. Then the other question is, and I'm coming back to the HOD and the MEC not present in this committee. The questions raised by Member Lekker is not answered. I've got questions that I personally want to pose to the MEC on this, because I've raised it in the budget meeting. The MEC is misusing her power to appoint people to the hospital board politically. Is it not going to happen again in the clinic boards? Because the people, the MPs, yes, from this legislature, not a single one is coming from our party. Everybody is coming from the DA. Now, how can we trust the MEC going into the communities, especially when we look at Khayelitsha Mitchell's plan, especially when we look in Grabouport Rivier? Can we trust the MEC that it won't be political appointments? So that is, Chairperson, why I'm saying this was a very important meeting for the MEC and the HOD to give us the specific answers. And I, as a member of this committee, I want to ask that we call the MEC back to this committee, because I need answers on that question.
Okay, but yeah, I We can do that, but we can also, in our recommendations when we are done, when the department is gone, we can also pose your questions in the recommendations to the MEC and the HOD.
That's a waste of time.
No, the MEC can then respond to it in writing as per our recommendations of this committee for this presentation today. We heard what Dr. Valakri said, so we'll leave it at that and we'll do that in our recommendations. Dr. Valakri, you, I saw members Mitchell and Gopi also still want to follow up. Do you, Member Mitchell?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to go back to the training and the three rural and three metro. I just want to make an appeal that when those three are identified, that you please bear in mind that rural spreads from the central Karoo being rural to the Overberg to the west coast, so that you that those things are taken into account and the geographical spread from getting these pilot to get a good understanding of the implementation of this before just
finalizing.
If you want me to withdraw what I'm about to say, then please do so, Jay. But that is not a random pick without any actual thought process behind it. So if it's offensive, I'll withdraw, but that I need to get that point across.
It's clear enough, it's not offensive.
Mm.
Your follow-up, Member Gopi.
Chair, mine is also on the training and three rural and three metro. But mine is that a doctor said that 4 days will be too much for people to be away from home. Now my question is, why can they be not training of trainers? I mean, this rural areas or this districts do have people that are working for department. Why can't those people come to be trained and go back to train their own areas? Then we don't need to elect only three rurals. Then all the rurals can be trained and can have enough days to be trained, and not thinking of people that must go out of Cape Town to go to the rural areas and now say they can't stay 4 days. Those can come because they are working for the department, be trained and go back and go and do training. And also, I'm not satisfied with three rurals. All the rurals must be trained.
Okay. Will you respond?
May I respond? The three rurals and the three metro sites that have been selected are only for the pilot. Thereafter, we will finalize the program. We want to test the orientation program. And that is planned for August. Once we have, in September, finalized the program, the rollout implementation of the one-day orientation will be across all clinics in the rurals and in the metro. You talk of the four-day program, the 2 to 4 day program. We're looking, once we also receive, in the orientation, we'll also get a clear understanding of what the scope and the breadth of the follow-up training will be. So that has still not been determined. Whether we train on weekends, we're going to look at case by case, what would be the most suitable for the clinic. The issue of trainers is a very valid point, and we've had the discussion because we have to look at the sustainability of orientation. You cannot bring in a service provider and expect that, particularly in the rural of vast geographic differences where there are 100 clinics spread over, I think I have the detail here, 109 clinic committees in 89 towns. You cannot expect one service provider to do that. So we have to look at alternatives, and I think you make a very valid point about train the trainer. We need to ensure whether we have departmental capacity, and if not put that in place, we have to look at the role of the community liaison officer and how we can have the community liaison officer in terms of sustainability carry this on into the medium and longer term. We also have to look at how can we enable via our media, a video program which would support orientation, have a frequently asked questions and answers on a website, for instance, that would also assist. So what enablers are there to assist the clinic community members? But if we do take your point, and we have been considering a train-the-trainer approach, particularly in terms of sustainability of the program. So I think, I hope that offers clarity to the members.
You talk about social media. How have you, in terms of the rural and the deep rural, how will that be communicated to those who don't have means to that? And yet they are willing to volunteer to serve on this committee. So how will they be communicated to? And who will do, or what is in place to do, that om te verhoed dat die pap nie op die grond val nie? Because it is, you know, it very often does. So what is the M&E in place to ensure? And you know, I think one of the members mentioned, and I'm not sure whether it was Member Gopi or Member Mitchell, when you do the orientation, do the training as well. So that you don't, if you do the orientation, only a few comes, then you have to set back again, postpone, for that orientation to be done, and then the training is postponed. And, you know, so do it in, you know, in one, kind of, yeah. Sorry, Member Lekker and Mitchell.
No, Chairperson.
I think the department has good intentions. That of ensuring that there's that voice of the community that at all times we must listen to. And part of its responsibility is to ensure that those clinic committees are competent enough to do what they are supposed to do. They are competent enough to keep the department in its toes. Now, having said that, Chairperson, the department goes out of its way to outsource the training of this important body within our clinics. I don't have a problem with outsourcing it to service providers, but I've got a major problem when it comes to a lack of planning thereof. You can't say that you want to ensure that communities understand their responsibilities and you appoint a service provider that will do that, and at a later stage you decide to either put a community liaison or train a trainer, whatever person that is going to make sure that people are always on par with their responsibilities. In my view, Chairperson, I think this thing of appointing a service provider to do that is a total waste of money. Instead of appointing people that will be trained and permanently entrust them with a responsibility of ensuring that our clinics are on board in terms of monitoring and evaluating their responsibility. I'm not sure for how long are we going to. Maybe it's Nakosa today, tomorrow it's going to be another service provider and another one and another one. And to me, it's a money-making scheme. I want us to put value in our vision, in our ideals, to ensure that we capacitate the people on the ground. Now this thing of outsourcing everything, it's a waste of money, Chair. And at the end of the day, we would be having a data that will be sitting with those service providers, and we don't have as the department, whereas we've spent some monies. I think at all material times, Chairperson, we must take lessons on what is happening, whether it's happening at the national department, national government, or it's happening at the provincial legislature. We must take some lessons. The SASSA debacle, your forensic data that we've got is also a crisis on its own. Are we going to create that same crisis again? Because NACOSA will develop their own study material and everything, and at the end of the day, at the expense of our own money, they will have some issues. I think, Chair, some serious talks must begin to take place. This is a total waste of money, total waste of time. I think there must be proper consultation. I must have missed some other meetings, perhaps during the time that I was away, and maybe I don't have other information. But from where I'm sitting, I think we're wasting money. And at the end of the day, we will cry tears, I think.
Thank you, Member Mitchell.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to go back to the training. And I think the hammering is on, and I want to for the record state, I don't have an issue with the actual idea behind the training. I am trying to ensure that we spread the training across, and that a place like, no offense to those living in Paarl or in Drakenstein area, but that is deemed rural. But that is not really rural. Do you know what I mean? So that it's not that we go deeper into the province. I just wanted to for the record say that. Thanks, Jen.
I just want to know the timeline for NACOSA to do the training. What is the timeline attached to this training? Member Gideon?
Yes. On this issue of NACOSA, Chairperson, also, what I expected the department to do when they come and tell the committee that NACOSA is going to do training, and it will be financed by global funds. We also need to know who is NACOSA. We need to have the whole introduction telling us NACOSA is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is what they do. This is the history. This is please, department. Don't just come here and say we have awarded this training tender or whatever you call it to this company without explaining to us the details of that company. That time is long over. It is long kalverpay. That was not more than 5 years ago. We also need to know what was the credentials and why was it awarded to this and that company. But coming back to the issue of rural, the health department and social development department got two different explanations to the region called the Overberg. In the one, it's falling under Boland. In the one, it's falling under Overberg. You call it, how do you call this Boland thing, doctor? Overberg and Boland is called together Cape Winelands in your department. Overberg is not Cape Winelands, and I want to emphasize this again. So if you're going to make a distinction under three rural areas, please don't count the Overberg and the Boland. Overberg is a district on its own, but not in the health department. And I want to agree with Member Mitchell. When you look into rural, please, we've got areas in our constituencies that is so rural that people don't even know that town exists. Vredendal, the owner of the Veskes, the Zehoger, Beaufort West, and what is my mooi dorp is the name of you? Merveville, Verleersdorp, Gevierson en End. is hoger. Nie Wellington en Perel en Woester. Asseblief.
En bedrijf.
That's
how
you want to respond.
So, Madam Chair, I think there are a couple of points. I think there's a lot of conversation about the training, and I think those points are well taken. So, looking at sustainability of the training and a program to train the trainers, I think that's a very good idea, and I think we'll definitely go back and look at that. The information on NECOSA, we could make the information on NECOSA available. NECOSA has been around for many years, and they've got some expertise in this area. And we didn't have to go on a new tender process because they've been working in with the department and they've been funded by Global Fund and they've got a component on community strengthening which can be piggybacked into that. But we can make the information available on the course, so that's not an issue. And I think some very good ideas around the training, so we will certainly go back. I just want to reassure the members about the logistics as far as the rural goes. So that has been raised by our rural colleagues that we've got, 109 committees, 89 towns. How do we do the logistics? So we're going to pay quite a bit of attention to that and to just make sure that everybody that needs to be trained gets access to the training in an appropriate way. So that we're very mindful about. The issue of deep rural areas not having access to email and social media, and we're also mindful of that. So the intention here is what we intend to do is to develop a database of all the hospital boards and all the clinic committees. So once people are appointed, we get their details onto a database, which is automated, and then we just make sure that everybody on the database is plugged into these training sessions. So we've got coverage, irrespective of whether they got emails or not. So we've covered that. I think the issue of the Big Brother phenomenon. So one is mindful about that, and like Sally has said, that in the legislation we've made provision that they don't need the permission of the hospital board. Now what happens in practice is something that we're going to be vigilant about. But certainly if we receive complaints in that area, then we can act on that. But statutorily we've made provision and we've been clear that the hospital board, you've got to administer the accounts and you're accountable for that. But in terms of who makes what decisions regarding the funds, it's the clinic committee that does that. So that really is the intent and it's in the regulations and in the act. But we'll have to see how that pans out on the ground and if there are complaints, we need to address that. I think that's in the main chair. So the timeline for training, like Andre has said, so we're still working with NECOSA to bed this down about exactly what we do. And I hear comments about considering whether we should have one thing as opposed to induction orientation and the training program. Our only concern was that if we did the one thing, and let's say it panned out for 3 days, okay, so our ability to get to everybody in a short space of time is going to be quite challenging. So that's the logistics that we need to work through. But I hear the concerns and we certainly go back and consider that issue. And I think the points about the data, etc., like I said, there will be a database which we will own and keep that. I think I've covered the main things.
If we listen to the inputs by the clinic committees, health committees in our budget, when we were doing our budget, I was very impressed to listen to volunteers on behalf of the committee that knows what is happening around them in the medical world. Now, this is where my concern. In the past, before this legislation, the community has always went through that process in a democratic way, where the community has elected people that they trust. Now, if we look into this piece of legislation, it is like Marentia Gilling is going to nominate Member Wenger
to be the volunteer for this specific community. And then there will be 150 more people nominating who they think can go into this thing. And I know what's happening on the ground. There's political fights over this board. How are we going to make sure that those people who serve the communities and that board with the knowledge is not going to get lost? That was my concern that I wanted the MEC to answer. Because I don't want, if we say this legislature is a piece for that the voice of the community is not getting lost, how are we going to make sure that no political game will be played here? And how are we going to make sure that those people serving those communities, whether they're ANC, whether they're EFF, ACT, PDA, whoever, but who are serving the community just for the love of it, is not going to be lost? How are we going to make sure about it?
Dr. Valimchi, just to add to that is also to bring that out in the content of training. Also the Big Brother phenomenon, to bring that also out in the training that is going to be embarked on. And then I want to request, when you have finalized and confirmed the dates and the areas of training, that this committee gets that information as well, please.
If we could possibly be invited to that first training, I would personally want to experience that.
Okay. Doctor?
I think, Madam Chair, I think the points are well taken. I think you will be raising with the Minister some of the political concerns that's covered. I think once we finalize the program for the training, we can communicate that you have the dates and the details. Sure, we can extend an invitation, and that would be great if members would like to attend the first session. It's going to be distributed. It's not going to be one big session. It's going to be distributed in different areas, but we'll give you the dates, and if you'd like to attend, it shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you. Member Gopi, I just want to indicate to you that forms was distributed by Namonde to us just after the budget meeting that we had. Let's just check that.
But my question about the form to the people that is supposed to nominate was not answered. How was it distributed? And those that don't have emails that were at Worcester, that are on the attendance register, and those that did not attend the summit, how did it get to them?
Sorry, I'm going to answer that. So what we've done is I've covered the electronic site, it's attached to the website, etc. On our database, we've also got a whole lot of NPOs that we've been working about in the different districts. So we've also sent it out to them so that they can make it available to local community members. The clinics themselves also have forms so that they can access it. So those are the areas for people who don't have electronic means to get the forms.
I just want to add, can it be made available also to the ward committees so that they can distribute as well? Member Lekker. Then Doctor, Member Lekker, before I give you, just to, you know, it bounces on this political football and also on a power base. What is the trend in terms of the overlap applicants to the clinic committees as well as the boards? Yeah. Member Lekker?
No, thank you, Chair. My follow-up is on the councillors to serve on these committees. Can I get an explanation on the process undertaken or process explained to the Department of Local Government on how the councillors are seconded to serve on these committees? Can I get an understanding? How was it explained, or what's the process?
Doctor?
If you look at Section 6.1 of the Act, that deals with the appointment of the councillors to the committees, and it provides that one or more councillors of the municipal council for the municipal area in which the primary health care facility is situated, nominated by the municipal council or a health-related committee of the municipal council. So it's written into the Act, the requirement for one councillor or optionally further councillors to be appointed onto the committees. So that process is something that's been dealt with politically, the nomination of councillors. We took guidance from the Department of Local Government as to the process, and a letter was written just giving the background on this provision in the Act and the requirement that councillors are in fact nominated. So it was really a question of communicating this provision to the relevant structures, and we took guidance from the Department of Local Government, and that went out, I understand, from the HOD's office.
And what we've done is attached to that communication was the list of the clustered committees, so in which areas are the committees that they have to nominate people for.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to place it on record that the ANC in this municipality is not aware of such. I'm in conversation with the chief whip of the ANC, and she's not aware of any processes that are undertaken at the moment. So I did not want to be suspicious of the process, but after speaking to her and listening to the responses from the department, I'm forced to say I suspect the process is not open and transparent and fair. Okay, thank you.
Can we request as a committee the letter that went to local government? And I take it that it went to all municipalities. Yeah. They distributed it. We can just get the record of that letter.
Chair, I just want to raise a concern. A letter at this stage means nothing. I need to get an undertaking that the chief whip of the ANC in the metro here is aware of the process, because a letter it speaks volumes. I need to get an undertaking that this letter was sent to her or will be sent to her. I thank you.
Okay. But also in the letter we can see who it is addressed to at the municipality. Is it addressed to the municipal manager? Or is it addressed to the mayor's office? Or the chief whip of council? Member Gideon?
Chair, local government doesn't work like provincial legislature.
Yeah.
In local government, you've got your chief whips of your different parties. Your means of correspondence is when you want to correspond to councillors is through the office of the municipal manager. And you ask the municipal manager to make sure that all chief whips of all political parties receive the letter. Because if we're not going to do that, I can tell you I'm in conversation every day. I'm coming from my constituency yesterday. Not even there. So that is why I'm concerned about the political building. Because it just goes in one direction.
Dr. Valucci, can I just ask for, in terms of this letter, specifically this now, if that letter can be provided to the committee coordinator today still after this meeting, because it is already there, so that we can just see the content of it and who it was addressed to, please. Member Levesque, is your exhaustion of questions to the department. I will now give over to Damaris, who also has a few questions and input that she wants to give on this presentation. So it's over to you.
Thank you. thank you to the chairperson and to the committee. On behalf of the Cape Metro Health Forum and the members that has been trained in the province, we're not happy with the process. And the committees, as far as Strandfontein, because I come from there over the weekend, and they were not aware of the process. So as a very active committee in the province, we would like this process to be a just and fair process. We have seen between 2008 to date that the department is trying something. What it is, we don't know. And it seems that whenever we go to an election process, then the department comes with legislation around community participation. In 2009, it was the District Health Council that was a flawed process by the department. Amendments was called for the District Health Council in 2011. To date, the Cape Metro Health Forum is not sure who their representative are on the District Health Council. And this committee has given the department the go-ahead to establish the District Health Council, but there's no accounting mechanisms. So now we have the amendment to this legislation, and the Cape Metro Health Forum was not happy with the process because it was not a consultative process throughout the province. We in the Metro pushed the hand of the department, and we had two consultation processes. And if you look to page 3 on the regulations, it was published on the 20th of April 2017. And the closing date was the 31st of May 2017. So consultation was not even granted for a month. So if you want to work throughout the province, does it make sense if you publish regulations and then the closing date is in less than a month? So we want the committee to be aware that the process is a flawed process, and it's not the consultative process throughout the entire province. In Maritzburg, 3 weeks ago, after the summit, because what the MEC said at the summit is that it was for the rural communities. Now, as the MPs have said, we are of the opinion that rural is behind the mountain and not before the mountain, because all the rural communities behind the mountain is not aware of the process. Yesterday in Montague, the community of Montague were not aware of the process. They indicated that to the minister. So we, as a structure that has had this partnership with the department, that is no longer having that partnership, is wanting this committee to realize that if we want legislation to work for the community voice, we need to have a proper consultative process where every opinion of the community matter. When this process was consulted, like the financial management, we have committees functioning now, and they have a budget. They account for the budget that they are given. Now they need to go to a hospital board, and I serve on the Tigerberg Hospital Board, where even we as members don't have access to knowing what's going on in that account. So it raises serious concerns as a community member and as an activist that has been actively involved in community health committees for over 25 years. And I think the concern that we have is the fact that the recommendations made by the Learning Network, of which the Cape Metro and two universities is a part, we've made lots of recommendations, and it's not even featuring in the regulations. So the process, it a process matter. And I think the MEC is not here, the HOD is not here. But I do think that this committee needs to have serious engagement with the department around this piece of legislation. Because we as the communities won't take this process to the public protector or to the Human Rights Commission if this process that is currently a flawed process is not remedied and corrected by the political overhead. we see the state capture report and where the national COP has not taken on the responsibility as oversight. So we want to ask this committee to ensure that your role as oversight on our behalf is corrected, and that the department will come and account in a more constructive manner, because we cannot play hide and seek with a community voice. We've been in existence all along. We have come to the hearings all along. We've made our submissions to this committee all along. We've always been there. Now we're not aware of the dates. If I didn't speak to Nomanda yesterday because I was inquisitive, because it's almost as if that voice said something is happening and we're not aware of it. So I called. So if communities had the partnership with the department, then the communities would have been aware of it. That more members would have been here. But it just shows you that there is a breakdown of community participation in the Department of Health, and it needs to be corrected. Then I want to go to the hospital boards. Madam Chair, if the CEO of the hospital board is not available for a hospital board meeting, the meeting is then postponed. So my question is, if the health committee, and I'm going to use Tigerberg as a very good example, because it has the drainage area of the northern substructure as well as the Tigerberg substructure. So in Tigerberg alone, we have 18 health committees. Currently, we have 10 functioning committees in Tigerberg. We have established 3 in the northern substructure. So the drainage area is the Tigerberg structure. And if the department goes to the guidelines, we wrote with the department in 2009, it will be very clear that somewhere the department has missed something, because the hospital boards are supposed to engage with the current committees. It's not happening. The hospital board doesn't even know the entire drainage area of that specific hospital board. So the concerns of the communities are real. And the department needs to step up when it comes to engaging around issues that matter to local health committees that are currently still there. Madam Chair, the current situation is the fact that the managers at the facilities don't want to engage with the current health committees. They are giving them these forms and saying, until this is finalized, we will come back and engage with you. Then we have a death in a clinic that nobody can account for, and the community raises the question, and we then refer to the hotline of the department. That is the current status quo of community engagement with the Department of Health. So the matter of this piece of legislation is very serious. The fact that Nkosi is appointed as or identified as a service provider, that is a flawed process. Because in August of 2017, we've asked the MEC to put it out on tender. This was not a tender process, which means that the department for this process has not put money aside for this process to work. So if you cannot assign money to a project, then it will be a failed project. Nkosi has got money for community system strengthening. So why hasn't it? Because the Global Fund has been awarded in 2016-2017. So why hasn't Nkosi identified the current status quo and ensured that they partner with committees that are currently functioning in the metro? So it's a slap in the face that the department has gone to this process of legislation, but they have not put and attached a budget to it. In 2010, this department told the standing committee that they will ensure that committees will be resourced through the District Health Council. 8 years down the line, it has never materialized. People are engaging at their own expense, and many of them are volunteers. Nkosi main focus is HIV AIDS, TB and STIs. So how, if they have a package for community system strengthening, how is it going to happen? What say will the community have in all of this? Because currently in partnership with the department, the University of Cape Town has the EU funding on community systems strengthening. And so in the metro, many people have been trained. So if it was put out on tender, then I think quite a few of us would have ensured that we apply for the process because we've done the training over the 25 years. And we also don't want training that is not accredited. Because if the department officials goes to training, it is training that gives them a career pathway. So why can our communities not have a career pathway when it comes to the training? So I do want this committee to consider this piece of legislation. Is it fair towards communities? Is it just in the democracy that we are in that the process is not well communicated to all committees throughout the province? Is it just for the communities to accept the department saying NACOSA will be the service provider when there is universities and structures that has accredited training for health committees that are currently taking place? So that is my little bit that I want this committee to seriously consider when you're outside of the department. We are quite happy to come back and provide input on the process that we've had with the department and where we are now. Because currently we are functioning, we are watching the department, and then we come here to say what we're not happy with. Meanwhile, we need to say it to the department, but because we don't have that partnership, we rather come to you so that you can then speak to the department. Is that a partnership? So thank you very much for this opportunity, and thank you, Nomonde, for always taking my calls, even just to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Madam Jane.
Okay, Chief. So many of the comments. We've been through a process, and a lot of comments were submitted over time and considered. So this is where we are now in terms of the acts and regulations. And I think the challenges and the appeal would be is how can we work together to make this functional. I hear the comments about the partnership, and I think we must acknowledge that the relationship is not a strong one. It's got a lot of work to be done, not only with the Metro Health Forum, but with clinic communities in general. And that's an area that I think we in the department and the minister, we need to apply our minds much more robustly. The clinic committees and boards is just one small slice of a much bigger issue that we need to apply our minds. On the issue of NACOSA and putting funds aside, So NACOSA, like I said, has got a long history of working with communities, right? So we've decided to go there. And the issue about making the training appropriate for what we need, and that is why we've been very cautious about not saying this is the training program and this is how it's going to happen. We want to take small steps, we want to pilot, we want to reflect and learn and adjust as we go to make sure that the training is properly tuned in with what the needs are. And that's the intention. So that is why you don't have a full detailed program today, so it's still work in progress. I think the more general point about engagement with the department is something that we need to go back and really address going forward, because it's not only about the clinic committees, it's a much broader thing. In the Act, there's also a section that we built, because we're quite mindful that if you take community involvement, there are a range of structures. So you have the district health councils, you have the hospital boards, you have clinic committees. And how do these things talk to each other? That was one of the issues that the Metro Health Forum has raised over time. Okay, and that's why you see there is a section there on measures for collaboration. Okay, and what is the kind of best fit that we bring these things together? Do we have a kind of annual summit or indaba per district or provincially, where all of these players come together and the department and the minister, so there's a place to talk and engage. And those are the kind of creative mechanisms we need to create to strengthen this area. Madam Chair, I think that's where I would leave it. I think it's more general comments that Damaris has raised. But the issue of communication and making these forms available, I think members have also raised that. I think we need to go redouble our efforts just to make sure the word is out there, because it'll be a kind of really compromised process. We get to the 15th of May and still large parts of the communities have not accessed this, don't know about it, etc. It'll be a failure on our side. So we will redouble our efforts in that regard.
That was the responses, but we'll also take some of the stuff that you have mentioned into our recommendations when we do that. Members, if that is the exhaustion of all the questions posed and all the concerns raised, then I would want to say to the Department of Health, thank you very much for this presentation and for the the opportunity that we could interrogate this presentation as we have done. And thank you for the community participation, because that is the importance of this presentation. Because as you say, we need to strengthen the community voice, but we can't have, we need to take into cognizance all the efforts, or we must put in all the efforts to create the platform for the community voice to be heard. So thank you very much for your concerns raised and your inputs given and the questions that you have posed via this committee. Thank you very much to the department and to you. Tea and coffee is in the foyer, and then members, please stay behind so that we can do our recommendations.
The committee has requested a list of clinic clusters, how many clinics and their geographical spread. And the members have appealed to the department to take into consideration the geographical spread of rural areas when training and pilot of this implemented. And the department must consider to train the trainer in terms of training, train staff members so that they can go back to their rural areas and train. The training and the department should consider providing training and orientation at the same day. The department must permanently appoint people to conduct training to ensure ownership of data for this training. the planning schedule dates to be forwarded to the committee, which is now the program of this of the training. The department to extend the invitation of the training to the committee. And the training, the committee has also requested that the letter from the local government to municipality must be forwarded to the committee today, which is now the letter that is in relation to the nomination due to the
inclusion of council.
Yes, to the, yes. And that's all.
Just that orientation to be part of the training program. Just read that part again that you said.
Department should consider providing training and orientation.
Yeah, the department should consider that the orientation be part of the training program. So that it becomes one part of the training.
To add the letter to local government, we must also know if it was sent to all chief whips of all political parties. Then secondly, I've requested that we receive from the MEC and the HOD the urgent urgency in Robertson, why they were not part of this committee.
Yeah.
We need an explanation on that.
In terms of the absence of the minister and the HOD and the urgent matters attended to in Robertson, that is what you want to know.
Procedure, and Greg, I'm asking because I don't know, but are we, as a committee, can we request that? That they must give.
It's a matter of public interest.
I'm just
it's
asking.
We can ask for the minister's absence. Did you receive anything from the the invitations that we received, remember we received the invitation for, was it the 16th and the 17th? There was an invitation from the Department of Health, and I said it's short notice because the 16th is a constituency day and the 17th we were here. So I said to them Monday, and the department only sent it last week, Thursday. I said it's short notice. They must let us know timely when they want to invite us to events of what they have. Okay, but we can ask the minister.
Chairperson, I don't know if you listen to the input of the community.
Yeah.
It is very important that we know what is our role and responsibilities in this committee. What is of utmost importance to me? Because I am bombarded as a member of this committee from the community with questions what is happening underground. I am bombarded if this legislature is not being used as an election tool for the DA. And it's not coming from me. It's coming from community members of what is happening underground. That's why, that's my reason. What I need to know, what was the urgency and the urgent matter that the MEC and the HOD wasn't present. Because I must go back to that community and give them answers. And that is the importance. I was a bit disappointed in the rep from the ministry who couldn't give this committee an answer. He was just sitting there quiet because it's his duty to do that if the MEC is not here. And I want the committee members to bear with me because if you listen carefully to to what the member of the community was saying. They will take this issue to the public protector. They will take this issue to the Human Rights Commission. We, as this committee, will be held accountable. And I really, I want to get that guarantee from the MEC and the HOD that this is not used for a political order. I want to get that guarantee. And I want to get that answer. And I'm saying this to the members in this committee. I was prepared to withdraw my question to the MEC. If the MEC was part of this committee this morning, and I could ask her questions in this committee, but she wasn't here. So my questions will be on the order paper, and the MEC must answer me in that meeting. So for me, committee meetings, and that's why I made it very clear also to my chief of, that the role of a committee member is to ask the questions in this committee and to get your answers here. But if we don't get that from the MEC, what must we do? It will also give me then the opportunity to go and address the community with the serious matters, concern. I don't want to play politics in a committee because the community must come first. But if that is the attitude of the MEC and the HOD, not taking this committee meeting seriously, what else must we do as members? So I really need that answer, Jefferson. Thank you.
And I think we have, as a committee, we have, as far as I can remember, we have not let politics be a part of this committee. We have acted on behalf of the communities that we have served, and I think we can say that, without any excuses, that we have done that. Yeah. And I note your concerns, Member Gideon. And that what we're asking the minister is on the answer given to the committee by Dr. Balibji, that the minister is attending to the urgent matter. And he said Robinson, eh? So that is that question that we are posing, that Member Gideon has just motivated now. Members, if that is our recommendations, can we go on to the next point on the agenda, which is the minutes dated 24 November. And this was on the appropriation. And then page 1 and the page 2. There was apologies from Member Makaleni, Member Gopi, and Member Lena. It's just Member Gillian was here. Member Gillian, are you rising? Thank you. And Member Mitchell. And then we have the quarterly report of this committee. This is page 1 and 2. and there's a page 3 for the program that we embarked on, and then there's page 4 and 5 and 6, and then there's that important page on page 7, just ensure that it is a true reflection. Then there's page 8, and then I'm asking for a Member Mitchell, Member Wiggins, thank you. And then we have the draft committee program. Members, then I just want to know, and we have spoken about it the last time, and I said to the committee members, and I think Member Gillian, you were the one who raised it at the time, and I think I'll forget this, I'm going to have to say, the time, the starting time for this committee, and you were supposed to take it back to the Chief Whip to raise it in programming authority. Did you? But I